Welcome to the Mildred Gaddis Show podcast on Kiss FM.
I am excited to introduce my next guest here on the Mildred Gaddis Show, and I am going to take my time and introduce her to you. Some of you are quite familiar with her. She is a Yale College graduate, 1981. She graduated cum laude. How about that? She is a Yale Law School graduate, 1984. She is tenured law professor Florice R. Neville Ewell at Western Michigan Cooley School Law School. Prior to becoming, let me back up here. She teaches property law, ethics, and contracts through her classes designed to make students practice ready. Students not only learn substantive law, but also have an opportunity to enhance their analytical skills by receiving exclusive access to her infamous tools, templates, and sample document materials. Prior to becoming an academic, Professor Neville Ewell practiced law in the private and public sectors immediately after clerking for the Honorable Julian A. Cook Jr. in the U.S. District Court for the Eastern District of Michigan. She was an associate at Sidley Austin LLP in Chicago and Hannigan LLP in Detroit. Thereafter, in the public sector, she was general counsel for the Detroit Housing Commission and chief of contracts for the city of Detroit. Appointed by former Governor Jennifer Granholm, she was also on the board of the Michigan State Housing Development Authority and became chair of that board. In conjunction with teaching, she has been general counsel for or represented developers, ecclesiastical organizations, municipalities, nonprofits, and public utilities. It is my pleasure to welcome attorney Florice R. Neville Ewell to the Mildred Gaddis Show. Good morning, lady.
Well, good morning, and thank you for your kind words, and thank you for the honor of being on your show.
I'm just excited to have this opportunity. I was talking with someone the other day who asked me if I knew you, and she said, "How is it that you don't know her? Let me just send you some stuff on her." And then I talk with someone else and say, "Mildred, you don't know her?" I said, "No, I don't know her." And I saw your credentials. I was like, "Okay, I must meet this woman." I am just so excited time to talk with you about this this season that we're in. This appointment to the U.S. Supreme Court. I know you've had a chance to observe some of the hearings. I think most of us couldn't take the whole thing. It was something like we'd never seen before. When you think about where we are in this country, this nomination and what she's been enduring, what's your assessment here?
Well, it goes without saying that when we look at our respective backgrounds, they're very similar. You know, she was trained by some of the most brilliant minds, brilliant legal minds in the country. And now, you know, we are witnessed her go through extraordinary measures to undermine the significance of the preparation that she had. And that's what hurts me, you see, because by the same token, it took a lot to get in that Ivy League school, you know, and I went through a similar route. And so when you see her sitting there effectively trying to navigate the waters about, you know, irrelevant issues, because the only relevant issue is whether or not she is prepared to take a seat on the highest court. And without any doubt, you see, she is prepared. She is ready. In fact, perhaps maybe more ready than people who are already sitting on the court. And so I go through major anxiety and prayer, you see, because we are still in progress. We're still in progress. I mean, if we look at the statistics, the data, there are 3,843 people, right, who served as federal judges in the United States. Fewer than 2% have been Black women across the board. And of course, everybody needs to know we have three tiers, right? We have the federal district court, we have the court of appeals, and then the ultimate the Supreme Court. She has clerked at every level. She has been under the wings of judges at every level. So the fact that, you know, the senators are raising any issues just makes me cry. To be honest, that's where I am.
Attorney Newell, Neville Ewell, I want to take you back in time.
Yes.
We were all around our television sets, and we didn't have all the access to the video as we have today. So we were gathered around our TV sets. Anita Hill. We saw a level of passionate disrespect to her by some of those senators. How do you see this disdain and disrespect with this judge harsher than what we witnessed with the Anita Hill situation?
Well, of course, on the one hand, there's some comparison, but of course, Anita Hill was merely a witness, and she was merely testifying at now the justice's hearing. So it was completely different. Because you see, now we have someone who's ready to take a seat. But when it comes to the concern that we have about people continuously questioning the skills of Black women generally, no doubt it seemed as if we had something similar. But of course, Anita Hill was just a witness. This is, of course, of much more import because we're trying to get her on the bench, purely and simply.
You know,
she is needed.
When you watch this and you listen to some of the venom that's coming out of the mouths and hatred, I thought Lindsey Graham was going to have a heart attack as he stormed, I'm like, this is, we know who he is. So that's not new, but it just, you know, it seems that at every level, he keeps getting stronger and stronger in terms of his exposure of himself to the world. As a Black woman, you've seen them come, you've seen them go. You understand the law. You're passionate about it. You see a woman who has ran faster, jumped higher, who has in her career, she's continued to better her best.
Yes.
You know, you had to have gotten angry a little bit this past week.
Oh, well, absolutely. Absolutely. It's been, like I said, very, very difficult to watch. But, you know, I think that the thing that we have to recognize is that notwithstanding the fact that when she was going through Harvard, when she was, you know, in the college or in the law school, she probably encountered something close to it. I can't speculate about that because, you see, at this point, we really always recognize the significance of our faith, the significance of recognizing the shoulders that we stand on, so we don't allow those issues to stop us. You see, and that's what I heard from her as well. So yes, I'm very angry, but Mildred, we don't have time to be angry. This is too serious. We've got to keep moving forward. And so that's what I heard her saying by simply responding with very straightforward answers in the tradition that she's been trained in. You see, she was making the point, a very powerful point. Let's stick to what's relevant. Let's stick to the issue. That's how she has been trained. That's what she's going to do on the bench. And that's how we need to approach this. And see, all the naysayers and all the negative stuff, you know, what a waste of time. And that's what she did by neutralizing her answers and staying on point. That's what we tell our students to do. That's what she did. You see what I'm saying? We don't dwell on the negative. And I think, you know, it's a mindset issue. Because if you go there, once you go to that space of anger, it's very difficult to come back. You see, and you lose track of what you're trying to accomplish. And so as she was going through her journey, competing with other students, you know, hearing comments in class, you know, this in some respects may have been simpler than it was then. We can't speculate, But I can personally say, you know, you're going through experiences in those Ivy League environments or in any college environment. And if you get off the track, if you lose track of why you're there, you could fall off and never regain momentum to get done what you need to get done, which is matriculating at the highest level. That's it.
That's a great point. That is a great point that you're making. You know, I could not help but think about Thurgood Marshall as these hearings began. And I think one of the most unfortunate realities for us lay folk is because we're not in the discipline, in the discipline of law, we don't get to, there are rare instances where we can observe the brilliance of lawyers and judges, you know, or unless you, and I just hate that.
and rare instances where we can trust it, which is why we need the diversity. Because if, you know, if litigants walk into the courtroom and never see anyone who looks like them, what does that say about our judiciary? You see, that's the real argument here. We need diversity throughout our society, but particularly on the bench at every level, obviously, because we have to make sure that we stay true to this thing called democracy, right? That the public has confidence in our institutions that support our democracy. And if we don't, it creates doubt. And that doubt sometimes manifests very, very negatively, as we've seen, I think. People are beginning to question it across the board.
Without a doubt. What does it say when you have, as Senator Cory Booker mentioned, all of these national police organizations supporting this woman?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, she has worked as a prosecutor, as a defense lawyer. So she has worked on both sides, basically, of issues. And so I'm not clear what those, you know, specific organizations are doing and why they're endorsing. But I think that, again, I want to focus on the specific manifestations of what she does and how she handles her business, if you will, in the court, because that's what I'm interested in. And I want to quote her here. She said, "I'm looking at the arguments, the facts, and the law. I'm methodically and intentionally setting aside personal views, any other inappropriate considerations, and I would think that race would be the kind of thing that would be inappropriate to inject in my evaluation of a case." What is she saying? But exactly what you said about me early on. We are trained, you see, to stick to a methodology of determining how the case should be decided. Now, at the same time, does that mean that we are not ourselves? No, we are quite authentic. And I think justices like Sotomayor have said before, you know, at the end of the day, it matters when we're at the table because our view of those facts, you see, is impacted by who we are. You see, our perception of what's relevant when we're trying to determine the issues and, you know, the significance of those issues and how we resolve those issues, that's why we need to be around the table. And you can believe that who we are impacts that. You see, so we got to get around that table. I don't know what they're, you know, why they're endorsing, but I just know that this woman, through her responses, is saying, "Look, I get it. I know exactly how I'm supposed to decide a case." So,
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
How important is it for a judge, I don't care what level of the bench he or she is on, how important is it for a judge to have some real life experience?
Oh, I think it is extremely important. Experience is extremely important because without it, you don't have any perspective. And one of the things that I teach my students is the significance of understanding context. Meaning, you know, when a client walks in or when the litigants walk in, you've got to be able to understand the context. In order to get to the real problem, you have to know exactly what's going on. Of course, with more experience throughout our profession, you know, having clerked, having worked, you know, having practiced, she has the experience, you see, that gives her more depth. Because without that depth, how can you be more effective?
Wow.
You just can't be.
There is a former, well, he's still a Catholic priest on another level, Caucasian from Detroit, posted on Instagram. I guess he had just had enough of what he had seen this past week. And he posted, for overqualified women who have to remain calm, friendly, knowledgeable, and professional in front of underqualified men, Lord, in your mercy, hear our prayer.
Yes, that is exactly the problem. And of course, many of us enjoyed, just very quickly, the joke that came out, or the comedians who had the Obama, you know, they had Obama and then they'd have another person who was suggesting what Obama really thought. I think it was Kenan and Peel. And it is that sort of, you know, inflection that why is it in 2022, you see, we are still, as people of color, Black women in particular, finding ourselves having to, if you will, sublimate away or somehow, you know, disregard, again, like I said, the madness of what's going on so we can stay on the issue. You know, it's a very complicated piece. And I just spent some time, because I'm also a mentor for Black students outside of the law school where I teach, through the National Bar Association, the Women Lawyers Division. And I was talking to them this week because one young woman had traveled to D.C. to observe the hearing. And I think she was from a school in Louisiana, I believe. And we were talking about this very issue. And so it was a beautiful thing to see it from, you know, a young law student's perspective. And she said, you know, I sat there and I was just devastated that she had to go through that. And we talked about very honestly how, as lawyers, you see, we may even represent someone that, you know, in our gut, you know, if you're a public defender, like, you know, the judge, you know, they were criticizing her often. Well, you represented this person or you did that. See, we have this thing called an oath that we take, you know, and as a result, you might be able to avoid some cases. But the question is, how do you reconcile those sort of competing challenges that you have? And so it's a very difficult, you know, walk that we have. And you've got to be true to yourself, be authentic, and at the same time have to stay true to what our oath requires us to do.
What's happening in law schools across the country? I used to say that law school was a jealous mistress. I mean, the demands are tremendous. You know, it's a law school and then there's nothing else. What's happening in our law schools across the country? I have a young man who's coming in next week, who's an author, who's the first Black student body president. They don't call it the student body president. They call it something else at Harvard, who is, by the way, on his way to Harvard Law. And Harvard Law just received his first Black American dean of the law school.
Yeah.
Yes.
Dean of students, I believe.
Yes. Oh, okay. Okay. What's happening with law schools across the country? Are Black Americans going in great numbers? Have the numbers diminished? What's the tone?
Yes. Well, I don't have the actual statistics, but I can just tell you that in our classrooms, the numbers are going down. So they're going down overall, and I simply do not have as many students of color in the classroom. So I think it's a combination of law students generally not coming and then students of color. And I might say that, you know, one of the reasons why I teach is because access to justice will ultimately demand that we have more young lawyers from all backgrounds entering our profession. This was a way that I thought that I could take the information that I've learned from great, great minds and try and infuse that. And see, I call my students my academic children. Why? Because at the end of the day, my responsibility is to pass the baton back to them. You see, and so we don't have as many as we were once getting, but certainly those that are there, I'm doing my best to try and get them excited. And see, when they see things happening like this, you know, like the hearing, that gets them motivated. Because I say to them, we need you because we have to continue to break this ceiling, this glass.
I am just so happy that you were generous with your time this morning to come on the show and share with us. And I'm going to quote you on this access to justice.
Yeah.
Access to justice. What would you like to leave our listeners with this morning as they continue to watch this process?
Well, I would like to just say, and you know, here's the joke. I speak in 3-hour increments. And so I'm doing my best to be brief with everything. But, you know, my classes are 3 hours long, so I get too much time to talk. But first of all, I want to thank you again for this opportunity, because we must, as a Black community, we must understand the significance of the Supreme Court in the, you know, Capitol, which is the highest court in our land. But we must also understand the significance of our Supreme Court in Michigan. These courts that are at the top are providing rulings, handling issues at the administrative level that impact the lower court. In other words, we've got to get engaged to actually understand what our legal system is about. So we can't stay angry too long. You see what I'm saying?
We can
get mad, that's true. But like the ancestors, we've got to say, what's the plan? What's the strategy to make sure that we have more diversity? Because without diversity throughout, you know, we are not living up to the very thing that this country is supposed to stand for. And that is unacceptable. And that's why I'm involved in all the things that I'm doing, because it is not acceptable. And see, I stand on the shoulders of Judge Cook, of Judge Keith, of Judge Anna Diggs Taylor, because when I graduated from law school, Detroit was the mecca. I think it had the highest number of Black federal judges. And many of us came, you see, from those Ivy League schools and said, we want to go there, because now we need to continue our training because of our quest for justice. So I want people to remember it. I want young people in these high schools about to vote, I want them to understand this isn't just something irrelevant. This goes to the core of our existence. I thank you again so much.
Attorney Florice R. Neville Ewell, we are grateful to you, and we will be knocking on your door again. Okay. A lot of legal issues are coming up all the time. And I think that Todd Perkins and my other legal friends, I've bugged them so much, but I want to thank you so very much. You've been extremely important as we look at what's going on in Washington with this U.S. confirmation.
And she's going to get it. We're just declaring that. Today is Sunday, and let's all just get on our knees and make sure that that happens. Thank you so much, Mildred.
Thank you, and we appreciate you sharing with us this morning here on the show.
Thank you for listening to the Mildred Gaddis Show podcast, exclusively on 105.9 KISS FM Detroit.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.